my commentary in a moment, but what I'm going to say today may seem harsh, but these are difficult times in which the America we have known is being harshly scammed. The ramifications of what was done in the 2020 election by Democrats and a willing media are now unraveling. Progressive Democrats pulled off the biggest scam in American politics. Bigger than Obamacare, bigger than Hunter Biden's drug habit, and bigger than Nancy Pelosi's mouth. They engineered the greatest voting hoax in history and ejected a sitting president from the Oval Office, only to replace him with a doddering old fool whose last grasp of reality was when he spoke fondly at Robert Byrd's funeral, saluting the former member of the KKK and longtime battler against civil rights. Biden's Uncle Joe persona is far from who he really is. In the past, his many lies were to embellish himself and build a new character that was larger than his real-life experiences. Today, Biden lies again and revolves around his ability to function. I share credit today with Steve Shelton of Town Hall. Let's not beat around the bush. Joe Biden is a feeble old man who is probably a year or two from needing to be admitted to a skilled nursing home facility or requiring constant medical supervision. Yet, Democrats got him elected to lead the most powerful country on the planet. Those two contrasting facts should scare Americans of every persuasion, but they don't. The left is so infected with Trump's derangement syndrome that they were willing to elect a man who literally must be led around by the hand when in public. Now I can already hear the Biden apologists howling at what I just said, but I don't make that statement without proof. Behavioral observations aside, any insurance company actuary with knowledge of long-term care tells you that the odds of needing nursing home care at age 65 are relatively high and grow exponentially as one ages. Those odds are far greater with pre-existing conditions. Joe Biden was 78 years old when inaugurated as president. According to the Social Security Administration, he has a life expectancy of just beyond 9 years from that time. Biden was older at the start of his term than Ronald Reagan was when he left the office. Biden's age alone puts him at high risk of needing advanced care, not to mention the obvious decline he is demonstrating. Of course, he doesn't demonstrate his declining faculties very often because his handlers keep him secluded from the public. On a side note, one need look no further to provide the basis of the media regarding their claims of Reagan's senility versus Biden's. Just ask anyone over 50. A recent video showed Biden quickly being led by the hand by a staffer. When I first saw the video, I was trying to concentrate on what he was saying and disturbed that he was being shielded from unscripted questions in a public setting. Days later, it hit me like an Antifa-thrown frozen water bottle that the key to the video was not what Biden was trying to say, or that his staff was actively working at removing him from a potentially embarrassing situation. The real takeaway was that the President of the United States was literally being led away by the hand. The staffer did not grab him during the questioning and pull him away. She was leading him by the hand and arm from the moment he exited the building, much like one would do for an elderly grandparent. Can anyone, even for a second, imagine Donald Trump being led out by the hand? I can hear the snarky NPR reporter and CNN anchor describing the scene time and again of President Trump being led by the hand following a barrage of rhetorical questions meant to impugn his character further. That news feed would run 24/7. It would say, "Weakened Trump, led away by his hand." Major networks would open the news with hand-picked experts on the elderly, describing the symptoms of decline. Their commentary would run nonstop on left-wing outlets with scrolling captions like, "How many good days does Trump have left? Is America ready for the death of a president?" I don't care if you liked Trump or not. but it's irrefutable that he did not require being physically led away by the hand. Far from it. Anyone who worked around Trump will tell you that it was nearly impossible to keep pace with him. In comparison, I don't think Joe Biden could get through an 8-hour workday being a door guard at a funeral home, let alone dealing with the stresses of being the leader of the most powerful nation on earth. Here's a short list of people who must be led by the hand in public: small children, criminals when handcuffed, the severely mentally handicapped, blind people on occasion, those with weakened ambulatory systems who are at the risk of falling, grandmas at weddings, and men while in shopping malls. This is simply a statement of fact and is no way intended to be a slight to any of the groups I mentioned. No one requiring hand-holding due to age-related decline should be president of the United States. There is nothing more sobering and humbling than watching someone who once was vibrant and energetic lose those characteristics to the sands of time. Anyone who has held the hand of an elderly grandparent or parent knows that feeling well. Joe Biden cannot function on his own. He has to have help from either his wife or his handlers, and that's dangerous for the United States. The progressives around him are responsible. He is no more in charge of the United States than Mickey Mouse is in charge in Disneyland. I share credit today with Angelica Stabile, Justin, and Kristen Jones for their research, which I will include with my own. Let's begin today with the obvious. Any loss of human life is a tragedy. Unlike Black Lives Matter, I do not distinguish between the deaths of blacks and whites. I have as much concern about the loss of a black life as I do about the loss of a white life. Regarding the riots, looting, and burning after the loss of a black life at the hands of police, it's time to take an honest look at the causes. No one should dismiss the fact that police officers are human beings and they do make mistakes. They're also a relative handful of police that do things that make all police officials look bad, and those people need to be weeded out. It is ironic that mass shootings and police shootings did not occur in the Trump presidential years nearly as frequently as they have under the Biden administration. No one appears to be afraid of the Biden administration. Not criminals, not China, not Russia, not North Korea. Each time a black life is taken by a police officer, we see protesters taking to the streets, rioting, stealing stuff, and setting fires. In none of those cases have we seen these protesters waiting for the facts before storming into the streets. So why does that never happen when a white life is taken? More whites than blacks are killed by the police every year, but none of them result in riots, looting, and burning. Recently in Rock Hill, South Carolina, a black man, a former pro football player, shot and killed 5 white people: a doctor, his wife, 2 young grandchildren, and another man who was working in the home. No one took to the streets rioting. Why not? Here we have a black man killing white people, 5 of them. Why do white people not surge into the streets? And where is the media outrage? Why does this rioting occur only upon a death if the victim is black? Those are emotional questions. And when asked, the questioner is called a racist. Nobody wants to hear the answers, but we all need to hear them and put aside personal bias. The recent police shooting of Duante Wright and revival of BLM riots in Minnesota could have been prevented, just like every other incident like it. All of the recent incidents that have ignited a BLM or social justice firestorm could have been avoided if the victims had complied with the law, including Michael Brown, Alton Sterling, Freddie Gray, George Floyd, and Adam Toledo. The fighting, fleeing, resisting arrest, or otherwise noncompliance, and the media and leftist glorification of all of those things has to end. If not for noncompliance, both suspect and officer would be able to safely return home to their families at the end of the day. And isn't that what we all should aim and pray for? Yes, police mistakes, intentional, unintentional, or otherwise, need to be called out and, when necessary, loudly condemned, even by law enforcement supporters like myself. No tragedy gives people the right to riot, loot, or destroy American cities in response. You do not get to steal in the name of justice. You do not get the right to riot in the name of justice. You do not get to loot, destroy, burn, or vandalize in the name of justice. How many more cities and communities need to be destroyed before Democrats, including Joe Biden, come out and condemn these groups? The lawlessness needs to be called out, and consequences need to be loudly messaged and enforced. Recently, 13-year-old Adam Toledo was fatally shot by a police officer in Chicago. The mayor, Lori Lightfoot, waited almost 2 weeks before allowing video of the incident, giving time for the Black Lives Matter crowd to mount protests without any idea of the facts. The March 29 incident began around 2:30 in the morning when gunshots were picked up by a police audio scanner. Less than a minute later, police encountered Toledo and 21-year-old Reuben Roman, a criminal awaiting trial. Reuben Roman was tackled by police and taken into custody. Think about that. Here was a 13-year-old boy in a hoodie with a pistol in a dark alley running from the police with an adult. It is impossible to be shot in an alley at 2:30 in the morning if you are not out in that alley. The officer had to chase the boy because he resisted arrest and ran down the alley with his gun. The video clearly shows the boy had a gun. When the officer finally got him to stop, the boy turned his body so that the policeman could not possibly see the gun. He then appears to toss the gun a few feet away, but the policeman could not see that. So then the boy raised his hand. Put yourself in the place of the policeman. He knew the boy was armed. He could not see the gun being tossed away. And when the boy raised his arms, the officer had 0.8 seconds to determine if the boy was going to shoot him. None of us know how we would react. The attorney representing Adam Toledo's family made an incredibly ignorant statement. He said, "Adam, for the last second of his life, did not have a gun." Well, that's because he had tossed it away in the seconds leading up to the last second of his life, something the officer could not see. The question is not the last second of the young man's life, but the days, weeks, months, and years where he apparently had little, if any, discipline. What mother allows her 13-year-old son to hang out with an adult criminal? at 2:30 in the morning. Where did his gun come from? Odds are we'll find that it has been reported stolen. Chicago's mayor, Lightfoot, made an equally ignorant statement. She said, "Foot pursuits put everyone involved at risk. The officers, the person being pursued, and bystanders. We have to do a better job, and I've charged the superintendent with bringing me a policy that recognizes how dangerous this is. We can't afford to lose more lives." She also said the video footage is something we do not want our children to see. Think about her response. Police are charged with upholding the law. Foot pursuits only come into play when someone is breaking the law and chooses to flee from the police. If everyone involved in a crime is allowed to run away from police, and the officers are not allowed to try and apprehend them, what does that say about the safety of the public? Contrary to the mayor's statement, children do need to see such footage. Let them learn from it. They see violence and gore all the time on television and video games, but it doesn't hit home because they can't identify with it. If they see a 13-year-old kid shot dead by the police on the news, they know it's real. I've advocated for years that kids in school need to be shown the evidence of what happens to you after your crime. Show them video of others in prison. Let them see the reality of what happens when you resist the police. So many times in the news, we see a person in a jumpsuit facing a judge, and then it's as if they disappear from life. But they don't disappear from life, just from our vision. It's then too easy to put it out of our minds. Anytime someone has the courage to say what I'm saying today, they get shouted down and called a racist. Nobody wants to talk about why each of us has the responsibility for our own words and actions. Adam Lodetto was reported missing by his mother, Elizabeth Toledo, on Friday, March 26th. He returned home the following day, but his mother did not call police to let them know that he had returned home. Officers only found out he was home when they called the home to check on the missing persons report that had been filed the night before by his mother. Who allows their 13-year-old to stay out all night and then be caught out and killed at 2:30 in the morning 4 nights later? On March 31, detectives again called Elizabeth Toledo to say that the description of her son resembled an unidentified person in the morgue. Elizabeth then told detectives she had not seen her son since he had left home again, either late on March 27 or early on March 28. She had not reported him missing the second time. Adam Toledo lived with his mother, grandfather, and 2 siblings. Again, no father in the home. All of this is what Black Lives Matter should be concerned with, not anger at the police. Crime, not cops, is by far the largest threat to black lives. Incidents of black men being killed by the police are exceedingly rare. Killing by police isn't even close to a major cause of death of black men. When they do happen, there is almost always a back story. The victim resisting arrest, attempting to grab the officer's pistol or taser. When I see the heartbreaking footage, I keep thinking, stop fighting the cops. There is a real threat to the lives of people of color. but it isn't coming from the men and women in blue. It's criminality in minority communities. To prove my point, let's look at New York City in 2019. There were 319 people murdered there. Fully 88% of them, 280 people, were black or Hispanic. And more than 83% of them were murdered by other people of color. Did you hear that percentage? More than 93% of those murders of people of color came at the hands of other people of color. People of color also accounted for almost 74% of rape victims and more than 80% of rape suspects, 69% of robbery victims, and more than 93% of robbery suspects. More than 75% of felony assault victims and 86% of the assault suspects. People of color, in other words, were disproportionately both victims and perpetrators of violent crime in New York City in 2019. Murders there were up in 2020 by 30%. 95% of those additional shooting victims were people of color. Since 2003, more than 1,000 people have been murdered in New York Housing Authority projects alone. Don't those black lives matter? Where are the protesters in those cases? Why are they not out marching to demand better behavior? It isn't just the direct victims of crime who suffer. Increased violence reduces a city's quality of life. Property values go down. Window bars go up. Long-term neighbors move out to the suburbs. Small businesses close, abandoning storefronts. The demagogues stir up passion about a terrible homicide committed by a rogue officer in Minneapolis, but say nothing about the bloody carnage in their own city. Their cures will do little to stop occasional questionable police shooting, but sentences innocent New Yorkers, overwhelmingly black and brown people, to death and injury as criminals are emboldened and police officers abandoned. Relaxing bail laws, springing thousands of dangerous people from jails, eliminating the anti-crime units, and shrinking the police departments only hasten the demise of once great cities. As for cities like New York, Minneapolis, Chicago, St. Louis, Seattle, and others, why are politicians moving to demoralize and destroy the greatest police departments in the country? I'll tell you why. Because it's easy. It means they don't have to deal with real crises facing the minority community. Rising violent crime, a failing education system, inept housing authorities, an unchecked and often dangerous mentally ill homeless population. Perhaps the greatest crisis of all, the moral catastrophe of the black community, where 75% of children are born out of wedlock to single mothers. There are real problems that require real work. Obama's Attorney General Eric Holder once said that Americans are cowards when it came to discussing race. He was unquestionably right about that. The discussion needs to begin, and it can't start or end with only a look at the police or white people. The problems in the black community are, for the most part, self-inflicted. As long as our country allows strident voices like Black Lives Matter and the naive young white people who march with them to dominate the discussion, we get nowhere. Any attempt to get the black community to focus on personal responsibility and the problems that lack of personal responsibility has brought with it meets with complete denial and shouts of racism. Let me say this again. It is impossible to be shot in a dark alley at 2:30 in the morning if you are not in a dark alley at 2:30 in the morning. Is that really too hard to understand? A great role for Black Lives Matter to take on would be an awareness campaign in minority communities about what fatherless homes, lack of parental discipline, and teaching hate of the police and white people leads to. That will never happen because such an action would not lead to more money. And that's what's important to Black Lives Matter. When minorities are suffering and the head of that organization is buying million-dollar homes, it's obvious what really matters. It is not black people. It's green dollars. Call me a racist, but I mourn for every life lost, regardless of color of skin. In the case of George Floyd, I see the unnecessary actions of the officer's knee on the man's neck. I joined the call for justice, whatever the facts would lead to. But George Floyd was no hero, deserving statues and being made into something he was not. It is just to seek the truth and follow through with whatever punishment is deserved. It is not just to pretend that these lawbreakers I've spoken of today were anything other than criminals. No one deserves to die, but those who choose to stand in front of a speeding train bring it upon themselves. It is time to demand that the causes of crime and death in the minority communities be placed on those really responsible for it, themselves.